It's the way of love live. Way of love. The variety show committed to bringing you positive stories and life-affirming messages.
Combined with enough inspirational music and satirical comedy to make it worth everyone's while.
With informative interviews and dynamic guests, we present the best of what our global community has to offer.
In a format we lovingly call short attention span theater, we combine vaudevillian styles with futuristic sound effects technology for maximum entertainment value.
Together, we focus on the most important issues of the day by exploring informed and enlightened approaches wherever we can find them.
Using serialized fiction, we bring to life great stories from the past and sci-fi possibilities of the future.
Thank you for joining us in our multimedia foray into the positive possibilities of our planet.
Hang on, you never know what to expect.
Here we go.
It's the way of love, live.
Hello, we are here with Yasmina Porter, Fulbright Scholar, professor at Cabrillo College. She is an expert in dance and mindfulness.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We have a lot of topics to explore. We are going to start off with, first of all, what you have going on at Cabrillo College and some of the practices which you have found to be beneficial to people as just great tips in general for mindfulness.
Okay, so I teach in the Academy for College Excellence at Cabrillo. It's a really wonderful program that is especially catering to people who didn't do well in school but really would like to get a college degree. And we got a Gates Foundation grant because it's so incredibly beneficial for people. So one of the things that they teach in the foundation course, that's the first 2 weeks of the class, is about learning styles and how to learn when you have different learning styles. Everybody has different ways of learning, and we break it down into four basic categories. So I'm just going to tell you those, because if you just know
yes.
what yours is, that will help you to figure out what kinds of things are easier for you, and then those things which are difficult, you want to be teamed with people who don't have the skills that you have. So that's one thing in terms of relationships. It's kind of paradoxical because we often think that we want to be around people who are a lot like us. But to be successful in life, you really need to have teams of people that complement one another. So when you usually would think that people are opposites, we call it complementary. So
Oh, I wonder what style I am. So there are four styles. What are they?
Okay. So the four styles are synthesizer, interactor, analyzer, and concluder. So a synthesizer is, we kind of generalize a lot. Like you can tell often, and we all have all of these. They're like, we call them energies.
Okay.
But you know which one yours is. Is strongest in, because when you do those things, it's easy for you. It's effortless. It's fun. And the other areas that are your lower energy, if you stay doing those things all the time, you won't be very happy at your job or in your relationships. Mm-hmm. So synthesizers, if you get a bunch of synthesizers together, they are full of ideas. They just can brainstorm forever, more and more creative ideas. And you'll be like, oh, wow, what about this? We could do this. Oh, how about a castle in the sky? Oh, and we can make an escalator out of clouds. And, you know, you just kind of can keep
this
going.
This sounds like MC and I think we're synthesizers. So lots of ideas.
Lots of ideas. And mm-hmm. we need this. So it goes in order. You need synthesizers first. To do anything in life, you have to start with an idea. Even, and my forte is really working with people on healthy relationships. Even to have a healthy relationship, you must have first an idea of a healthy relationship, of what you'd like it to be like. So then the next thing is interactors. So first you have to synthesize and come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. And then the next level of creating anything that's going to be successful is then you've got to find the people who could make that happen, right? So if I wanted to build a castle in the sky, well, it's like, okay, well, who's really good at constructing clouds? Are there, you know, so you'd have to, the second step is interactors. And so there are people, I'm one. I love talking to people. If I go to an event, like where I met you last night at the feast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was at the Santa Cruz Institute of Contemporary Arts. I'm going to make a plug for that right now, because if you want to help fund these amazing artistic projects where you pay $20 and about 8 people pitch their artistic projects and ideas, and then at the end of the evening, everybody votes and all of the cash goes to fund one of their projects. And really an amazing event. And this happens monthly. Santa Cruz Institute of Contemporary Arts. Check it out.
Yay.
Okay, so we have the
synthesizers, mm-hmm. interactors, mm-hmm. and then the analyzers. I want to make a real thing, even mm-hmm. though we do live in Santa Cruz. Let's say we're trying to create a beautiful garden, right? So synthesizers would come up with all these different ideas about how a garden could be, and it would be fantastical, all the different things they might come up with. There would be no end. And the downside of synthesizers, if there's a group of only synthesizers, is they'll never actually do anything, because they'll keep on thinking of all the great things, all the possibilities, and not necessarily finish or like take action.
It doesn't come to fruition.
Right. But they'll have a million ideas.
Mm-hmm. I like this garden analogy, because we are listening to Maria Stark at the beginning of the show, the Garden album. And a lot of this is about growing what you want in life. This is why we're paying special attention today to love and relationships and how to grow the best fruits.
Yes. So the next group after interactors is the analyzers. Analyzers are people who like to organize data. So once you've got your analyzers involved, let's say so you're going to do this beautiful garden, you have a ton of ideas, and then you get your interactors together to find out, okay, like, who are the real people who can really do this? Who knows how to build this amazing fountain? Who, you know, is really good at having the best native plants that can have the least amount of water and the most beneficial for the ecosystem and, you know, bringing in really beautiful birds and all the wonderful things. So then you'd bring in your, you'd have to have your interactor would be the person who would connect with the people, right? To get them to say yes to being involved with the project. Because an interactor, I think you are that too, they're really good at connecting with people. So analyzers then come in, and they are the ones who look at the data, and they're like, okay, how is this really going to happen? Like, what's the budget? How much time do we have? You know, how much dirt do we have? How much, you know, well, is this going to work in the summer? Is it going to be too hot? And do we have to pay workers' comp to the work? You know,
the more so scientific really, minds.
Right. Mm-hmm. They have mathematical and scientific and like to organize the data, and their minds work more towards telling you what might not work. You know, so they're internal in the same way of synthesizers. Synthesizers can be very internal with ideas, but they're coming up with ideas of what could happen, whereas analyzers, their benefit to a team is telling you what's not going to work. And that narrows things down. So we need them. You know, so the thing about where this is going in terms of relationships is that we need each other. And that when we understand that those things that get on our nerves are not some kind of personality flaw in our partner or boyfriend or coworker, but this is their learning style, and it is the way that they're able to succeed in the world. And that once you appreciate that, then you make these complementary teams.
And do people have different degrees of this in our personality?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So I, for example, when they have I think it costs a couple $100s if you want to do it in public. I don't know how you do it, but if you go to the ACE program, it's at Cabrillo College. They have cohorts that are starting in the fall. Anybody can do it. You know, if you're able at the age that you can go to college, any age. I've had students from 17 to 70. Then you take these assessments, and you have different levels with different people. So I personally, I have a very high interactor, mm-hmm. and a very high concluder. It's like, just get things done. Like, we met yesterday, and here I am today, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we get things done. That's the last one, the concluder, is the person who makes things happen. They're like, okay, let's stop all the charts. No more brainstorming, no more hiring any more people, no more, you know, making sure that everything's just so right. Let's just make a prototype and see how it goes. Turn mm-hmm. the fountain mm-hmm. on and see if it works.
Let's give it a try.
Let's give it a try.
Fantastic. The program we're talking about is the ACE program. Where can we find this online?
You go to www.cabrillo.edu, mm-hmm. and then you go to the little search menu on mm-hmm. the side, and you just pop in Academy for College Excellence.
Wonderful. We'll have this on our website as well. The Academy for College Excellence.
Yes. The program is for anybody who feels like you might want to have some intensive support when you're starting on your college journey. So many students who maybe they, even if they did well when they were in school, but they are now just moved to Santa Cruz. And so a lot of times people, when they're first starting out their first semester, just going to a new place and going to college straight from high school can mm-hmm. feel overwhelming. So this program works in a cohort where everybody's together in a team. So the people that you take classes with, you'll be taking classes with them the entire semester. And the class that I teach is the mindfulness class, the mind-body balance class.
That's wonderful. Let's talk about that for a while. This is one part of the ACE program.
Yes.
Called mindfulness. Tell us, first of all, what do you consider mindfulness? Can you explain that to us?
Yes. Okay, the class is called Mind-Body Balance. Mindfulness, I'm going to actually practice right now. I'm just leaning back in my chair and taking a breath and realizing that this has been kind of a whirlwind. Getting here today and finding a babysitter for my son. Mindfulness is being in this moment. And it sounds way simpler than it is. It is pretty simple, but it's also challenging because most of the time in our Western society, people's minds, their thoughts are on the past and thinking about things that happened and maybe regretting that they didn't do it differently or things like that, or worrying about the future, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And so just to be here in this actual moment with this breath, that's what life is made up of. So mindfulness is being in the present moment and being with what is. And it's an amazing practice. The reason why it's taught in this college course is because there's been a lot of research, and we can talk about that later, but I teach private classes of mindfulness-based stress reduction. And it really helps with relationships and with a lot of health issues that people might have.
Wonderful. Do you have a tip for listeners how to be mindful? If one's finding themselves unmindful, what can they do?
Yes, I do. The most wonderful thing about mindfulness is that as soon as you notice that you're not being mindful, then you're being mindful. So the great... I think the tip that I would give is to come back to your breath. Just notice your breath. Just notice what's happening with your breath. Don't necessarily even try to change it or relax it. I'm doing it in this moment. If I just notice what's going on with my breath, my whole body relaxes. And people sometimes a lot of people have the wrong idea about how our biology works, how our minds work, and the neuroscience on this is that we actually function at a much higher level when we're relaxed. You know, so the idea, the stereotype of productivity is like this kind of really fast worker bee. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the more you calm the mind and just breathe, the more productive that you'll be because your mind will work more efficiently and effectively. It's kind of boring, but it's also sexy in relationships.
Oh, which is what we're going to get to. Wonderful. Is there anything you can do with your body?
Yes. There's a technique called the body scan. And I can tell you about this later, but I have CDs and so forth that you can get. And on there, I'll talk you through the different parts of the body. And this is an ancient mindfulness technique that comes from Buddhism. But the way that I teach it, it's the way that it's taught in hospitals. So it's not a specifically religious practice. It's a psychological practice of bringing your mind into the present moment by following along as the meditation instruction of different parts of the body. So, for example, right where you are, right now, feeling your left foot. Just feel how it feels right now.
Okay, listeners, feel your left foot.
And then you can go to your whole left leg.
Can you wiggle your toes, too? Is that kind of part of it?
You could, but actually, that is our striving mind. That's our Western mind that feels like we should do something.
Oh, okay.
And mindfulness is just about being. Like, what's just right there? Okay. Like, even if there's a pain, if I notice and I go, oh, my left foot is throbbing or there's pins and needles, I don't have to try to make it go away. I just notice it, you know? And that is really helpful on a date to feel your body and feel, because a lot of times people go on a date and it's like a really horrible, horrible job interview. You don't know if you're getting interviewed or if you're the one doing the interviewing, and you don't know if you want the job. That's why people hate dates. And then let's say you come home and you go, oh, yeah, actually, I really did like that person. But then they never call you because the whole date went like a job interview and they didn't want a job interview. They wanted a date.
So we're going to be talking about this. After these commercial messages, I want to make a plug for a couple programs right now before we go to commercial break. First of all, is the ACE program at Cabrillo, where you can become, you can learn more about these
mindfulness practices, yes, and learning styles, communication styles.
And you can go check that out at
Cabrillo.edu.
And look up ACE or
Academy for College Excellence.
Perfect. Yes. And Yasmina has been a professor of the mindfulness part of that class.
Yes, yes. And if you're interested in any of my CDs, you can contact me at yasminaporter@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And we'll have all that on our website. And can you tell us, how have you seen people change through this mindfulness class at Cabrillo?
Oh, wow. That's huge. They all change. I had a student who had been in prison, and he couldn't stand near anyone. You can imagine the post-traumatic stress of, you know, the horror of being in prison. And from this practice, I allowed him to sit a little farther. We usually sit in a circle, but I was like, he didn't want anybody behind him. Anyway, he completely transformed after taking the course, and his blood pressure went down. He told me that, and that's a common thing for people. And he just was more calm because he was able to be in the present moment and recognize that he wasn't where he was before, that he was in this room now, and that he was safe.
That's wonderful. You must have so many stories too. Well, listeners, you're listening to AM 1080 on KSCO. It's The Way of Love with Yasmina Porter on mindfulness, and we're going to be talking up next about mindfulness and relationships. Stay tuned.
Oh, precious crystal souls in our many faces, each reflecting with the light from unique perspectives. And this net of jewels twinkling in testimony to every song that we have ever sung ourselves into. And if I may partake in my addictions to stories that
Maria Stark's The Garden album.
Happy Buddha, always on my mind. Weeden, thoughts don't mean anything at all. Oh, the great big nothing I recall.
We're here with Yasmina Porter talking about mindful relationships. And the first part, Yasmina was talking about her course at Cabrillo College, which is the ACE program, in which she teaches the mindfulness program. And we're so happy to have you here on It's the Way of Love, Yasmina.
Thank you.
And now we're going to be talking about the relationship aspect of mindfulness. Made a couple references to it before. First of all, is there a place where you can direct us to a website where we could see more information on this? Or
I can...
These CDs you mentioned?
I actually, it's not up on a website. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm just taking private clients. I do have room in my practice for about 3 more people if people are interested. By the end, you can let me know and we could do a 20-minute consultation and find out if it's a good fit. But in general, if people want to learn about mindfulness in general, I study through the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, mm-hmm. Working towards getting certified. But part of the certification is you have to teach 8 classes before you're certified and do all, several years of study, which I've already done with Bob Stahl.
Let's talk about some of your mentors and teachers, too. You have three important teachers, right?
Yes, I do. One of them, as I mentioned, is Bob Stahl. His last name is spelled S-T-A-H-L. And if you local people in Santa Cruz, you can find his stress reduction courses at Dominican Hospital. You can just do a search there for him. Again, my email is yasminaporter@gmail.com. If you're going to be in the Bay Area or in Santa Cruz in the fall, I'll be teaching the 8-week stress reduction class, the mindfulness-based stress reduction class.
Wonderful.
So you can, contact me if you'd like me to let you know when the dates are set.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other teacher, Bob, is a wonderful, amazing human being who also happened to, he's this kind of really cool PhD, awesome guy from Massachusetts who went and became a monk, a Buddhist monk, and then he fell in love and he got married, and so he's no longer a monk, but he's very mindful and really encourages me with the work on the mindful dating. My other teacher is Reverend Deborah Johnson. And
we love her.
Oh, isn't she fabulous?
Yeah.
And her teachings on being a blessing, that having the intent to bless and to be a blessing, and isn't that a way better analogy for a date than a job interview? I'm going to show up, and I'm going to bless this person, and I'm going to really see who this person is and appreciate whatever there is about this person to be appreciated. That makes every date wonderful. I always have great dates. my other mentor.
Well, you're a beautiful person, beautiful soul. So that's no surprise to me.
Oh, thank you. So
let's, can we talk a little bit about the path? What led you down the path to mindful dating? And I guess I have another question too. Do you need to first be a mindful person before you can even enter the dating realm or combining this with another human being?
No, that's the wonderful thing about my teachings is actually dating. I encourage people to actually, I prefer to use the word courting.
Lovely.
Because what goes on nowadays in dating is something that for most women, especially, it is not serving their needs. Most women are really interested in being deeply loved and cherished and respected and having a long-term primary relationship. That's your average woman. She's not just interested in going on date after date and hooking up or even really dating somebody for years and then having them dump her eventually because he knew from the beginning that she wasn't really the one, And so courting, what I encourage in my practice is practicing practice. Just like if you want to play soccer, well, you got to practice if you want to be good. If you want to play baseball, and the mindfulness practice, that the practice about thinking about your left foot and your leg. I mean, it sounds funny, but the students who do it and they go through the whole body in half an hour, part by part, that helps them when they have to do an exam. They have to bring their mind back to the paper.
I bet.
And they've practiced bringing their mind to where they want it to go. And it wanders, trust me. But when you practice, then it'll be there for you when you need it. So my teacher, Bob Stahl, says it's like sewing a parachute. And you don't want to start sewing your parachute right before you have to jump. So you don't want to wait until you meet the man of your dreams before you practice being present and being in your body. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to practice with anybody who's not dangerous.
And I also want to make a plug for people in long-term committed relationships.
Absolutely.
Because this mindfulness, of course, it's not just once you meet and, oh, this is my, you know, other half, my split apart, my soulmate. It's also important, even in the relationship, once it's going to continue a healthy relationship.
Absolutely. Going back to quoting Rev D., whatever it is that brings something into your life, the energy that obtains sustains. Mm-hmm. So whatever you do to get something, you're going to have to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you put gas in your car to make it go, you're going to have to keep putting gas in your car.
And yeah.
Right? So if you, whatever you did to get this woman, if you want to keep her, you need to keep doing that. If she knows who she is, and she
will. And let's talk about the physicality. You know, men and women, we're into, you know, how things look visually often. Mm-hmm. And how do you suggest maybe someone dress or carry themselves to attract a mate?
I already told you before that this was controversial, and now you're bringing it up. But it's the truth. I will first say that, you know, I'll just go ahead and answer. I believe that you should dress in a way that will get you the treatment that you would like. So I'm going to tell a little joke from, I heard Chris Rock. This is controversial, but I think it's really true and poignant.
All right.
He's a comedian, and he said that he once approached this prostitute and found out that she wasn't a prostitute, and he got slapped. And then he said, well, if I went around in a policeman's uniform, I wouldn't be shocked if somebody thought I was a policeman. So I think that what I believe is that, personally, I mean, if you want to describe how I look, you can. I mean, since I've left my house until I've come to sit here, I've gotten compliments from every single person that spoke to me.
Yes, Yasmina is wearing all white, a beautiful dress that is very creative. It looks like nothing I've ever seen available in a store. It looks like you have some connections where you get your clothes. Where did you buy your outfit? You look like an angel.
Thank you.
In person.
There is a designer who is in Atlanta. Email me. I'll send you her information. She actually has a deal where you can send her $100 and she'll send you a dress every month. And you can send her your measurements and it'll be tailored for you. It's pretty amazing.
Why do you choose to wear all white?
Oh, I don't always wear all white.
Okay.
You just happen to see me. I do like white, though. I have dark skin. I'm African-American, and it looks really good on me.
It does. You look fabulous.
Thank you. But the way I think people should dress, if you want to be treated like a queen or a goddess, then you should dress like a queen or a goddess. If you want to be treated like a little girl, then dress like a little girl. I don't want to be treated like a little girl, so I don't dress like a little girl. But, you know, maybe there might be days that I might want that, especially when I'm in a relationship, you know? So you can let your imagination run with that. However you want to be treated, that's how you should dress.
Mm-hmm.
If you're feeling a bit frisky and you want to dress up like a bunny because you want to be petted, you could do that.
I love it. I love it. I want to talk about also mindfulness with emotions, because when we're really involved with someone else, frequently the things that come up, you know, isn't just a pain in your left foot or whatever. It's the emotional awareness. Do you have some suggestions for that?
Can you make up a scenario or?
Well, I know. Okay, let's say jealousy.
Yeah.
Maybe one is jealous of something that the other, you know, perceived in the other. Okay. Being maybe mindful and aware of that emotion then might lead to then a decision to act or not act and just wait till the emotion goes away, or it can be dealt with without anger or extreme energy. Like, is this something that
okay,
you can talk
good.
About?
That's good. Yeah. So some of the mindfulness principles, one is non-judgment. So, and just being with what is. And so if jealousy comes up, the practice would be to acknowledge jealousy. And I'll give you a really beautiful example. When I was, when I first got married, I believe I have a really good old friend who's a man. He's an Englishman. He's a dear old friend. He's still a friend. And he came to spend New Year's Eve with me and my family and my husband. And sometime in the night, he's my ex-husband now. He came over to me, and I was talking to Oren, this old friend, and he took my hand and he whispered in my ear, "I'm feeling jealous." That is mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
There was no judgment. He just acknowledged how he was feeling. I mean, almost getting teary-eyed thinking about it, because he didn't
accuse you
wrong. He didn't make himself wrong. He didn't make Oren wrong. He just said, "I'm feeling jealous." And then I did what I felt was right. I got up and I took my husband's hand and I went off and spent time with him. You know, I mean, I could see why he's being feeling jealous, because I hadn't talked to him in like 2 hours and I was giving my 100% attention to my friend who'd just flown in from Europe. You know, and then there wasn't any more problems after that. But it actually made me feel loved.
Yeah, what
I felt really loved. I felt really beautiful. I felt cared for. I felt such a tenderness and compassion for my partner. You know, so it's about not making yourself or anybody wrong. And that's helpful in all of dating. I mean, I wonder if he'll be listening, but I went on a date last week with a person who was just delightful. I don't have any bad dates. He was delightful. And I didn't really feel a romantic attraction. And I let him know at the end in those words. I can have lots of, you know, great languaging. But I first said all the things that are incredible about him. He had a great sense of humor. He was really, really sweet. And it's really good to not make anybody wrong. There's nothing wrong with him. And there's nothing wrong with me.
Or your ex-husband, when he just stated that he was feeling jealous, didn't make you wrong for the situation of having this male friend over and being angry with you. Because anger doesn't really solicit a positive response. You would have then become defensive and not then given him the attention maybe that he was needing at the time from you.
Every emotion is teaching us something. And anger teaches us that we have a boundary that's been crossed. And without the anger, we might not know it's there. So the mindfulness is something that happens within. He might not have even needed to tell me that he was jealous. Just acknowledging that he was jealous for himself, without judging himself or me, that's the practice. Even just acknowledging and noticing that, you know, I think at the time it was very wise and skillful the way he just came over and said it. So, matter-of-factly, "I'm feeling jealous." Oh, it's really a great memory from our marriage. There was a lot of anger. I'm no longer married to him. But, you know, that was a really mindful moment. I think that anger should be acknowledged. That's what the practice is, that if somebody's feeling angry and they can acknowledge it in themselves. Okay, I'll say what mindfulness is not. It's not creating a story, which is what we usually do. I'm angry because you did X, Y, and Z, and I might not even recognize it, but this reminds me of another time when somebody else did this, and then they left me, or my mother, or so-and-so-and-so. And you make one moment into a whole lot of past, you know, thinking about things from the past that frame this for you and projecting into the future. If I allow this to keep going on, I'll be miserable my whole life. Mm-hmm. And now that anger is about fear of feeling this uncomfortable feeling your whole life. It's like, take a breath. You're just angry right now in this moment. And this moment will pass. So be with it, feel it. Well, in the mindfulness practice, we don't really encourage people to yell at one another, but to be with our anger and feel it. And the longer you can sit with it, the longer you can figure out what's underneath it. What is it really, really about? What's it really, really about? And that will help you get to that place of figuring out what your values are. Because deeply, anger is something that's teaching you about what you value. And that would be something that your partner or someone in relationship with you might be curious about. Let's say I'm furious with my husband because he forgot the milk. Mm-hmm. I asked him to buy some milk and bring it home, but he forgot. This never happens. You know, and I get really angry. And it's like, what's the anger about? That I don't want to have to do everything. I don't want to spend my whole life doing everything I got to do. And this and that. And I'm making it into this lifelong thing. So what is the value underneath? The value is I want to feel like I matter. Like when I say something to you, I want to, if you don't
and it
bring
matters
milk,
to me
I'm
that
feeling like you don't matter, like I don't matter to you.
And it matters that you bring milk home.
Well, you know, so it's not about the milk. And you know, so many divorces are often people will say, you know, if they think about that horrible fight, they don't even remember what the fight was about because it wasn't about that. But with mindfulness, we can come to that place of really getting to the core of what is it that I really want here? And instead of being like, why didn't you come home with the milk? You know, like, I feel disappointed because I asked for something and you didn't remember. And I it makes me feel really loved when you remember. You know, projecting a future that's what you want.
And having the hope, having the courage to hope for what you want.
Yes,
and not just giving up.
Yes, yes. So this is going into not so much mindfulness, which is about being with what is, but the other element of my teachings, which comes from Reverend Deborah Johnson and the New Thought, being a prayer practitioner and a spiritual practitioner, which I am, in knowing that what your thoughts are creating your reality.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts are creating your reality. So you want to vision what you want. Keep it in your heart and in your mind and keep visualizing what you want. And as women, and I'm not a white woman, but I know that white women in this culture are told to be quiet. They're often told to be quiet and not to ask for what they really, really want. And that might be changing nowadays, but your mothers certainly were. And your mother's mother certainly were, you know. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I just learned this recently. I didn't know it. I was in this spiritual group and so many people were talking about how they could tell somebody something that was upsetting. You know, like maybe somebody wanted to come for lunch and they didn't really want to have lunch. And you're looking at my face. I was rolling my eyes and squinting my face. I just didn't get it. I was like, well, why wouldn't you just tell them? I just couldn't even understand why they're. And then I was thinking, all of these women are white. And so it's not just this one woman, and there are a lot of people are having the same kinds of things that they're bringing up. And so I asked them, I was like, were you all taught that you're not supposed to just say what you want? And they all said, yeah. This, like, what? This, why? What, how would that serve you?
This reminds me of Dr. Kelly Bryson, who came on our show, and he has a book called Don't Be Nice, Be Real. And it's about that. Just stay, because otherwise resentment builds up, and, you know, just, you can be real and nice, I believe. You can say things truthfully, directly, and to the point, and then not carry on with something you don't want to do in resentment, like going to this thing you don't want to do. Just don't go.
Well, that, I got to say, it's been a huge revelation in my life. And, you know, one of the things in Santa Cruz, one of my wonderful teachers, Bettina Abtecker, when I went to undergrad at UCSD, she said she couldn't stand political correctness because that's about saying, censoring yourself and saying things because you think that's what other people want you to say. And I believe in culture. I am a Fulbright scholar. I believe that cultures exist, that you know, Africans have distinct culture. African Americans may have distinct culture. There's obviously a lot of variety and it's not a monolith, but there are cultural distinctions. And so it was good for me to recognize this pattern that I was seeing in my white women friends. And, you know, it might be different because I've heard from other Jewish women friends that they were not taught that they were not they didn't have that teaching of that you should be quiet and not speak up or ask for what you want.
Or even to go with children should be seen and not heard.
Right. Or children.
That sounds scary.
Ooh. You know, so there's different things because I noticed some of those things about children because my ex-husband was white. And so I am teaching my children as an African and as an African-American that when you go into the store, I'll tell my son, look the person in the eye, hand them the money and say thank you. Right. And so I would watch him and I would be encouraging him the way that my parents encouraged me to look people in the eye and to engage people. Whereas when I would see my children with their white grandparents, they'd be telling my children, don't talk to strangers, don't look at strangers. If they looked at somebody, they'd say, don't stare and things like that. So it was kind of the opposite. Whereas I'm teaching them to sit up straight and mm-hmm. to look people mm-hmm. in the eye and to be empowered and to be strong and to know that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that their parents were, or the grandparents were trying to really protect them in a sense with a different idea. I mean, we both are trying to prepare our children for the world, but it's just a really different idea about what's the best way. Is it to keep them away from people who might harm them or to empower them to stand up for themselves and to speak for themselves? Because, you know, that's the way that I was raised, that will be the most helpful for you in life.
And if we go back to the dating, this kind of relates to dating because if you're meeting someone new, they're important. I think it would be important to have boundaries up a little bit. You don't know who you're encountering. You know, safety is important. But now I can see you have a comment about that. What do you think?
Well,
it's been a long time. I haven't dated in over 20 years. So what's it like?
You know, it's kind of, like I said, the energy that obtains sustains. So whatever you use to get the relationship, that's what keeps it going really well. I really have very specific ideas about first dates. When you first meet somebody, it's really helpful if you can really be open and soft. And you can only do that if you know you have a solid backbone. Right?
Wonderful.
Then you know mm-hmm. that you are coming from a place of strength. If you think about, I don't know if you've ever met really powerful people. I've had the opportunity of meeting royalty in Africa and in Europe, and Congresswoman Barbara Lee's a friend. I've met a lot of congresspeople at her house. And so they're often in a small setting when there's only two or three people in the room, really soft, really open, really powerful people. When you meet them in a relaxed setting, in an informal setting, they don't have anything to prove. They don't have a chip on their shoulder. They're very relaxed. So that is some of the teachings that I offer when I work one-on-one with a client, is first recognizing their own power so that they can be relaxed and open when you come with the intention of, I'm just here to be a blessing and to be blessed. This person showed up. They probably want to treat you well. Just sit back and receive.
Let's talk about what you offer to clients. And then we have about 5 minutes left for this interview. How would someone benefit by your program? How long does it last? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Okay. So I almost heard you starting to ask me, who's my ideal client? Was that where that was going?
Yeah. Who would need you?
Right. Well, there's a couple of things that I offer. One is just the regular mindfulness-based stress reduction. So that would be for almost anybody who's feeling really stressed out. And so there's 8-week courses, and you have to come to all 8 one day a week. So a lot of people don't have time for that. But you can, again, email me at yasminaporter@gmail.com.
Where are these courses?
They're taught at the Tannery. And I also am going to be teaching somewhere up in the East Bay, perhaps at East Bay Meditation Center. But if you email me, I'll send you the details on that. And so those courses are available. Also, if you're just interested in working with me privately, I take on private clients. I do at least a 2-month minimum, and it's $395 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will send you everything that we use in the regular classes for people who are meeting me with me live in person. So I'll send you the books, I'll send you the CDs, and so forth. And then we can do it over Skype. So there'll be a group Skype. And then I also do up to two 20-minute privates, phone calls, one-on-one with me a week, where you can talk to me about anything that's super, super stressing you out. So that's one thing that I offer to the general population.
Okay. Is this all about dating or is it general counseling?
It's not counseling. It's coaching about mindfulness. But the specific coaching that I do, now my ideal client, my favorites. So if this is you, definitely email me, yasmina.porter@gmail.com. If you are a woman and you like powerful, wonderful men who treat you like a queen, and you know that you are a wonderful woman who just loves to love, like you just love to be adored and you love to be loving and affectionate, and you have not been getting treated the way that you deserve, then you should contact me. Because I can guarantee you that if you work with me for at least a couple of months, 6 months, every client that I've had so far has been able to, within 2 months, have multiple people asking them out all the time. Not just from online, but from just walking up to you. Because we all women are so beautiful. You don't have to be skinny. I had a friend who was burned over her entire body, and the woman knew what a gem that she was. She had this great personality, and people just flocked to her. People really have the wrong idea about what attracts people. What attracts people is your light, and I can work with you to help you bring that out in yourself, because I can see it. I always can see it. And to help you have suitors lining up. And like a queen, you will greet them all graciously and receive their gifts and care about them and honor them as well and choose the right one. So that's my favorite thing to do. I love that work.
That's beautiful. And are some of your clients men as well?
The clients that I have as men, I work with on general stress reduction stuff, mm-hmm. The clients that I have as men, mostly they're married actually. And so they'll
hopefully
ask
not
things.
Looking for a
No. They're
just kidding.
Sometimes there's things from one area of the life can bleed over to others. So oftentimes men are stressed out about work, but then it affects their home life and their relationship mm-hmm. with their wife and their children. So I just help them bring more mindfulness so that they can relax more in their life, and that helps benefit their wives and children and everybody who loves them.
That's beautiful. Well, we really thank you for coming on It's the Way of Love, Yasmina.
And
we really hope to have you back on. There's a lot more we haven't discussed about love and just all kinds of topics.
Yay. Oh, can I give my phone number too?
Absolutely.
The business line is 510-326-5037 for any questions about mindful dating and stress reduction.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us on It's the Way of Love here with Yasmina Porter. It's the Way of Love on AM 1080 KSCO. Have a great day.
Thoughts don't mean anything at all. Oh, the great.
Thank you for listening to It's the Way of Love on AM 1080. We're going to hear from our local businesses. Stay tuned for more radio.
Are sprouted. Jesus, golden as the sun, with the kingdom of heaven in a mustard seed, all the simple truth of love indeed, and the youthful martyrs, they do bleed, your glory. Amidst the bounty of our thoughts and the fruits they bear, do a taste of the passions we have sought by the fashions of our haste. Won't you have a soul of a sea.